You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now, a message from CyberBit. Mastering cybersecurity is like mastering a sport. You build muscle memory through rigorous practice, then you train as a team to foster cohesion while operating under pressure. Like athletes, cybersecurity professionals thrive on hands-on simulation. But traditional courses, certifications, and open-source labs won't build you a winning team. You need CyberBit. CyberBit offers a hyper-realistic simulation environment for your SOC, IR, and C-suite to refine your skills, all using the market-leading SIEMs, EDRs, firewalls, and WAFs they use every day. CyberBit is offering CyberWire listeners a free live fire exercise. Sign up your team now at cyberbit.com/cyberwire. High Bitcoin valuation draws the attention of cyber criminals, and a number of those criminals work for Mr. Kim of Pyongyang. Alleged criminals, we should say. Centrion offers an update of its investigation of the Sandworm incident ANSI uncovered. Reports of the big hack are received with caution. Patches applied, pulled, and replaced. Joe Kerrigan describes a legal dust-up between Proofpoint and Facebook over lookalike domains. Our guest is Sinan Aaron from Barracuda Networks on their State of Cloud Networking report. And Florida's water system cyber sabotage provides a good reminder to stay away from unsupported software. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, February 21st, 2021. Criminals respond to market pressures and chase market opportunities as much as do participants in legitimate trade. Kaspersky published a study yesterday that sees a shift in the focus of much criminal activity over the latter part of 2020. One of the incentives the underworld saw late in the year was a significant rise in the value of Bitcoin, and so criminals repurposed much of their infrastructure away from less lucrative efforts, notably distributed denial-of-service attacks, and turned to coin mining. That's where the money has been. Among the criminals who took note were the state-sponsored hoods being run from Pyongyang, that is, the North Korean threat crew the U.S. calls Hidden Cobra. Cybercrime has long been attractive to the DPRK, as the Kim regime seeks to redress its general economic failure and sanctions-driven isolation from international markets. In this case, however, Hidden Cobra is more interested in direct theft than it is cryptojacking, that is, installing coin miners on non-cooperating systems. This morning, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency issued a joint alert with its partners in the FBI and the Department of Treasury, the alert's goal being to highlight the cyber threat to cryptocurrency posed by North Korea and provide mitigation recommendations. The tools Hidden Cobra has used in this campaign are collectively referred to as Apple Juice. The alert explains, quote, "The North Korean government has used multiple versions of Apple Juice since the malware was initially discovered in 2018. Initially, Hidden Cobra actors used websites that appeared to host legitimate cryptocurrency trading platforms to infect victims with Apple Juice. However, these actors are now also using other initial infection vectors, such as phishing, social networking, and social engineering techniques to get users to download the malware," end quote. So, trade with caution and armor yourself with appropriate skepticism in the face of social engineering. The U.S. Justice Department has gone one better than simply participating in a joint alert. The Washington Post today reported that Justice has unsealed charges against three North Korean espionage officers. They're accused of conspiring to steal and extort more than $1.3 billion in cash and cryptocurrency from banks and businesses around the world. The conspirators are alleged to have been active since 2014 at least, and to have pursued a state policy of revenue enhancement with a bit of revenge thrown in. The indictment was filed on December 8, 2020, in the U.S. District Court of Los Angeles. The three defendants are identified as belonging to the North Korean Reconnaissance General Bureau, the RGB Intelligence Service. It's noteworthy, perhaps, that the three were sometimes posted outside of the DPRK itself, including tours in China and Russia. The range of what the Justice Department press release calls schemes is indeed impressive. The list of criminal activity alleged in the indictment includes some familiar and famous capers, including cyber attacks on the entertainment industry. That includes the famous November 2014 Sony Pictures hack. Cyber-enabled heists from banks from 2015 through 2019. These involved fraudulent SWIFT transfers from banks in Vietnam, Bangladesh, Taiwan, Mexico, Malta, and various African countries. Cyber-enabled ATM cash-out thefts, ransomware, and cyber-enabled extortion, including creation of WannaCry 2.0 in May 2017, creation and deployment of malicious cryptocurrency applications, targeting of cryptocurrency companies and theft of cryptocurrency, spear phishing campaigns, and finally, marine chain token and initial coin offering, a 2017 and 2018 scheme that sought to evade sanctions by peddling fractional ownership in maritime fishing vessels. This operation was, of course, supported by a blockchain. A Canadian resident has also been charged with abetting the conspiracy with money laundering. Centrion, a firm whose IT resource monitoring tool Francis ANSI identified as compromised in what appears to be a Russian operation, yesterday provided an update on its own investigation. The software in question is an older version of the tool that's been unsupported for the last 5 years. There have been 8 updates since that version reached its end of life. The company says that none of its current customers were affected and that the 15 entities that were afflicted by Sandworm's backdoor were all using open-source versions of the obsolete software. ZDNet reports that the backdoor found in the open-source version of Centrion software was XRML, a malware that bears some similarity to InDestroyer. ESET offers some background and context, describing how they found XRML at the heart of InDestroyer during their 2018 investigation of Russia's 2016 cyber sabotage of Ukraine's power grid. As Bleeping Computer reports, it's unclear how the threat actor succeeded in compromising the software. Fortune summarizes the current state of opinion about Bloomberg's renewal of its story on alleged discovery of Chinese hardware backdoors into supermicrochips. Fortune notes that the current version relies on secondhand and anonymous sources, which, according to Fortune, does not inspire confidence. It's a curious story that Bloomberg first ran in October 2018. Supermicro has vigorously disputed the report, most recently in a statement it issued this week, and industry sources cited in the initial article did not confirm their statements when queried by other media outlets. U.S. government officials said in 2018 that they had seen no evidence of the compromise Bloomberg reported and that they would welcome being shown evidence that it had occurred. The present version of the big hack story is being received by most observers with a heavy dose of caution. Some news on patches and updates. Microsoft has pulled one of its Patch Tuesday fixes for Windows 10 version 16.07 and has issued an update to replace it. CISA yesterday issued 4 new advisories on control systems. The affected products include the Hamilton T1 ventilator, the Open Design Alliance Drawing Software Development Kit, Rockwell Automation's Allen Bradley Micrologix 1100 Programmable Logic Controller, and WAGO M&M Software FDT Container, Update B. Authorities in Florida continue their inquiry into the Oldsmar Water Utility cyber sabotage incident, but beyond expressing the hope that they'll be able to discuss the attack more once the investigation is complete, they've had little to say. Water systems in other parts of the U.S. continue to look to their defenses and seem to be using recent federal advice as their guide for doing so. Every day, your IAM tech debt grows.
your multi-generational services struggle to work together. Building an identity fabric can fix this. It makes all your identity tooling stronger and allows you to connect any app to any service you want to use with zero coding, zero maintenance, and zero app downtime. Strata's identity orchestration platform separates the identity logic from your applications so you can optimize existing IAM tools and manage them in a single control plane. Now, every vendor, standard, and architecture work together. In short, building your identity fabric means you can secure your non-standard apps, keep your complex access policies, retire outdated IDPs, and modernize in record time. So build your fabric with Strata Identity and get rid of tech debt for good. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity priorities, and receive a pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Sinan Aaron is VP of Zero Trust Access at Barracuda Networks. He joins us with takeaways from their recently published report on the state of cloud networking.
I mean, it's always helpful, for us to have a cohesive product strategy, looking into the future, you know, what our customers want, whether their infrastructure has been, as we predicted, has been, shifting away from on-prem and data centers to cloud infrastructure, public cloud infrastructure. So it's always helpful to probe, a diverse set of customers and organizations on all verticals coming from different compliance and regulatory frameworks to find out, what is future looks like for them, what is the digital transformation looks like for them, and how they're going on about it.
So what were some of the key findings here? What were some of the things that stood out to you?
One of them actually stood out impressive in a sense that I wasn't expecting to hear that. But more than three quarters of the participants, the organizations mentioned that they use multiple cloud providers. To be completely fair, and transparent here, I always assume that you kind of take a bet, right? Microsoft Azure, Amazon Web Services. To hear that, three quarters of organizations have multi-cloud, meaning that they kind of pick the best for whatever the functionality and the service that they're looking for, whether it's storage, whether it's compute or networking, they pick and choose. They pick and choose whichever is more optimized, whichever offers the best SLAs and best quality of service. They tend to go with that, which was refreshing and it's brilliant, but at the same time, it was surprising.
Yeah, fair enough. What were some of the other things that stood out to you?
I would say that also this was a positive surprise, and it was nice to hear that about 90%, 89 to 90% of the respondents say that they understand the shared responsibility model when it comes to cloud security. When they're using Amazon, Microsoft, or Google, they know that the vendors are responsible for the security of the cloud infrastructure itself, right? But then they are responsible for the security and the posture management of everything that they put on the cloud, right? So that's, unfortunately, a lot of the breaches came through, misconfigurations on the cloud and, all kind of customer-driven, perhaps not quite understanding their responsibility model. We've been hearing data breach after data breach over the years, but it seems like it's finally that folks are aware that the responsibility is shared between infrastructure security is on the vendor and how you configure and how you, protect the data and the configurations that you upload to the cloud is a customer's responsibility. So that's refreshing to hear.
You mentioned the fact that there was so much multi-cloud use was a bit surprising. Was there anything else that was unexpected when you read through things that you weren't expecting?
One other thing. I mean, I would say that we all have a healthy bit of skepticism about, you know, SaaS applications scaling super fast. Mail and productivity suites or your favorite CRM. So we heard from our, 800 participants that they endure latency and they were not very happy with the performance, right? So there could be many reasons. This was taken back in October 2020, the survey. And, you know, of course, shelter in place and lockdown was in full force. So there might be an outcome based on that our basic utilities were not meant to take on this super increased load of everybody working from home and hitting Salesforce or Office 365. But we did hear 70% of the participants mentioning that their SaaS workloads seem to endure a lot of latency.
That's Sinan Aaron from Barracuda Networks. Are lengthy security reviews pulling attention away from your security program? With the largest network of trust centers, Vanta can help you streamline security reviews to win customer trust, save time, and close deals fast. Proactively demonstrate security by showcasing key resources like your SOC 2 or ISO 27001, and provide real-time evidence for passing controls. And when a security questionnaire is required, Vanta takes the first pass for you. Visit vanta.com/cyber to take a self-serve tour. That's vanta.com/cyber. And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute and also my co-host over on the Hacking Humans podcast. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
Interesting story from the folks over at ZDNet. This is written by Catalin Simpanyu, and it's titled Proofpoint Sues Facebook to Get Permission to Use Lookalike Domains for Phishing Tests. Mm-hmm. What's going on here, Joe?
So what has happened is Proofpoint has a phishing test product that they offer to companies, right? This is a product to increase security awareness for the employees, and they'll send links out to people that when they click on them, the people will see a message that says, okay, you just clicked on a phishing link.
It's right.
But these domains look very much like Facebook domains. In fact, they are, one of them is facbook-login.com, which is just Facebook login without the E. Another one is really good. This one actually made me look twice in the text of the article. It's Instagram.ai. Now, from looking at it here with my old eyes, old man eyes, this looks to all the world like Instagram. I mean, the R and the N at the end make that M. And when I look at it, I see Instagram. It's a good name.
Right.
They also have Instagram.org and Instagram.net. Now, Facebook is using a process called UDPR, and that stands for Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution. And that is where they make a request to get control of the name, the domain name from the registrar under the auspices that this is somebody acting in bad faith and somebody trying to impersonate Facebook, right?
Right.
Or Facebook intellectual property. Now, here's the thing, Dave. I don't know where I come down on this one, right? Because Proofpoint has a good point that they didn't register these in bad faith. They're not harming anybody by using them. They're actually using it for education.
Right. Maybe better for Proofpoint to have them than have them be available to a bad guy.
Exactly. But Facebook has a good point here, but these are still out there and available, and Facebook doesn't control them, right? So what happens if Proofpoint, let's say, I don't wish this on Proofpoint. I don't have any, I don't think this is going to happen. But let's say Proofpoint gets acquired, right? And that business gets shuffled off and they stop renewing those domains. Those domains become available for anybody.
Right?
I wonder if there's a resolution here where Proofpoint could say, you know what, Facebook, we will reach an agreement. We'll reach a settlement here where we'll give you these domains. These will become your domains as long as we can continue to use them in our phishing exercises. in an agreement for as long as we're a company and we never use them maliciously.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, this can be a prickly thing where, you know, we've seen examples of folks, companies spinning up some of these fake phishing examples where they've used things like where they've said, you know, click here for your Christmas bonus.
Right.
And it's a phishing test. And on the one hand, it's compelling, right? Everybody
right.
wants a Christmas bonus. But on the other hand, in the midst of a pandemic when there's lots of bad things going on, getting someone's excited about a Christmas bonus that does not exist.
Right.
It's not very, not very sporting.
Yeah, that is not very sporting. I think that's bad form in these phishing tests, but these, I think these phishing tests actually target social media, right? Like there was a phishing test I got one time that's, it was just somebody going, hey, is this you on Instagram? And and it was just, you know, a link, it, you know, there's the you was highlighted and I moused over the link and I was like, that's not Instagram. But if somebody said, is this you on Instagram and use one of these Instagarn, things. And I said, while reading the article, I couldn't tell the difference.
Right.
I couldn't tell. It looked to me like Instagram. The only thing that would have tipped me off is a top level domain being .net, .org, or .ai, and then instead of .com, which I know Instagram is Instagram.com. This is an excellent tool for people. It could further increase the granularity. And it's not that malicious or, I don't know, I wouldn't say malicious, but ill-planned idea of saying, hey, look at your Christmas bonus. And then now the employee is really mad that first off, they got caught by a phish test. And second, and more importantly, there is no Christmas bonus. You're just enrolled in the Jelly of the Month Club now. So
I wonder how far this goes. To what extent can Facebook request these takedowns and to what extent are they granted? You know, how far afield can a name look? And could folks who have legitimate businesses that just happen to resemble an organization like Facebook's, could they accidentally fall into this net?
That is a good question. And I actually thought about that question. And I thought about, you know, if I had a company that was maybe something, I don't know, let me think of something really stupid, just a picture book of faces that I have.
Right, right.
Right. Right. And I called it Facebook Book. Right. And that was what I did is I sold a book of faces. Is that a legitimate business? Yeah, I think that is. I think that Facebook shouldn't be allowed to infringe upon that. But that being said, if I'm just publishing a book and I'm just some guy in my house publishing a book, I don't have the resources to fight the millions of dollars or billions of dollars that Facebook spends on lawyers every year. I'm not going to win that court battle.
No, no. No, it's, you know, I guess it's just a matter of who ultimately has authority in a takedown request like this. And will Proofpoint be successful in pushing back on it? I think it's interesting. It's worth watching.
Yeah, it is worth watching. Well, this is part of the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution process. So there is a process that's defined. So we'll have to see how this goes. We'll have to follow this one.
Yeah. All right, again, the article's over on ZDNet. It's titled Proofpoint Sues Facebook to Get Permission to Use Lookalike Domains for Phishing Tests. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Everything you want, nothing you don't. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Filecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpe, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.